Today's episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, Eleanor here.
And this is Jeffrey.
Have you visited our website recently? It's unwellpodcast.com. I wanted to remind you that this is the hub that we use to collect all things Unwell in one place. We have transcripts to every episode in case you want to read along or double check something you heard. There is info about our cast and crew. You can find information about how to support us on Patreon, and you can check out our merch store.
And you can find links to our advertisers. As an independently produced show, we rely on our listeners to help us succeed. Whether that is supporting us on Patreon or simply telling a friend about the show, your support makes all this possible. So, that website one more time, unwellpodcast.com. Hello, celery stalkers. Welcome to our first roundtable. We are sitting down with the Unwell Writer's Room today. We have sourced questions from all of you, and I'm sure I will have some of my own, as may the writers, and we are really excited to share this with you. My name, as you may know, is Jeffrey Nils Gardner, and I am the executive producer of Unwell.
My name is Jessica Best, and I am one of the writers on Unwell.
My name is Bilal Dardai, and I am one of the writers on Unwell.
My name is Jess Wright Buha, and I'm another writer on Unwell.
I guess, kind of everyone on this team has the same job other than me in this conversation.
Yeah. I mean, I'm also Sheriff Joshi, but I mean, that's not why I'm here today.
Very fair. And Jess Buha is also representation and management for one of our other talent, Miles Buha.
Yes, I am. I am Miles's mom. I directed him, I guess, in season 3, which was us in a closet and me going, "Can you say that like it's the first time you've ever said it?" Which is like horrible direction for an adult, much less like he was 5 at the time. For season 4, we had in-person recording and Jeffrey was the director and they did an amazing job.
It was a lot of fun. Okay, let's dive into these questions. Our first one is from Ellie. The characters of this show are all very unique, distinct, and interesting. Who are your favorite characters to write? That's a great question.
I guess I can start. First of all, thank you. I think the writer's room has worked very hard to try and make these characters unique and distinct and interesting. I personally have enjoyed very much writing Rudy and Dot specifically. I was also placed, I think, in a very privileged position to create Nora. The first appearance of Nora was an episode that I was given. And I'm very happy with being able to pass that baton along to other writers when they get to play around with Nora. I'll say those three, Rudy, Dot, and Nora. Yeah.
What is it about Rudy? What was about those? You talked a little bit about Nora, but with Rudy and Dot, I'm curious what draws you to them.
Different things. I would say so for Rudy, part of what I have enjoyed with writing Rudy is this sense of daring and like an openness to the world that perhaps I wish I had more in myself. And with Dot, I would say part of it, it's just that Dot's like sort of quick wit and arch sensibilities are fun to write, but also it's fun to write for Marcia specifically, who is an actress I've known for, almost 15 years. So
I think I'm also going to pick three. And I think my three would be Abby, Dot, and Wes. Partly because Dot and Abby both have this like irreverent quality that is really fun to mix with the supernatural stuff, to have a character actually be like, hang on, like, can we acknowledge this is bonkers? And also, I am very close with my parents. I get along with them very well. And they're both about the age of Dot. And so putting little glints of stuff that I know from them into the show, like Dot favoring Trixie Belden, was totally just for my mom. And then people on Twitter were like, oh my God, Trixie Belden, so much better than that Pris Nancy Drew. And I was like, fantastic. And then Wes is just so good. I don't know. I just, it's a fun mix of characters to write for. And all of the writers have added such cool little flourishes to them that it's really fun to get them all in the same room and hear them bounce off each other.
I think Lily is an amazing character to write for. I feel like I put a lot of myself into Lily, specifically like just being the person that's willing to be like, oh, nobody else wants to do this unpleasant task. Great. Not only do I know how to do it, but I'm going to do it great. And just like that confidence that comes with kind of realizing there are so many times in this world where like everyone's kind of standing around being like, I don't know what to do. And you just need someone to be like, we have to do something. And no one else is stepping up. So I am going to be that person that's going to be like, all right, this is what we're going to do. And yeah, and kind of having some control issues, but trying to be a good person. I don't know, like, in always kind of filling a void of a leader. I don't know. I really sympathize with Lily a lot, having just getting in these situations. And it's such a pleasure writing for Charisse. I just think she's the best human being and the best actor in the universe.
Yeah.
I love writing for Wes as well. His sunniness and the choice where like being sunny can be a choice and not just like naivete. Like I feel like Wes kind of has so much tragedy in his life and so much kind of loss and being, I don't know, the bravery of being like, I'm going to try to move through this with a positive attitude. I think there's a lot of bravery in Wes. And I have been shocked. Maybe we can talk about this more later about what a pleasure it's been to write for Chester at first. I'm like, this guy sucks. But Chester has kind of grown into this very interesting character. And this is a testament to the team, to the writers, the actors, the sound designers, and just like this, a man overwhelmed and wanting to be in control. Him and Lily are an interesting kind of pair.
I've been really interested in seeing how you and the actors have built these kind of contrasting people, both of whom have had a million jobs and are, you know, approaching problems sometimes from opposite directions or sides. But I don't know, there's something really interesting to me about the contrast of those two characters.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of funny that Chester starts out introduced in this context of like, okay, he's the bad guy. Like we've seen this before. And that like the audience and then also the writers went through the journey of like, hey, wait, no, he's more complicated than that. There's more going on.
Yeah. Next question. This comes from Kath. I'd love to know if you are fans of or were influenced by old-time radio dramas. And if so, which ones? I want to expand this question. If for any of you the answer is no, If there were other podcasts or other pieces of media in particular that influenced you. Let me also double check. Is there anyone for whom this question is a yes?
I mean, not the first part. No, I wouldn't.
Okay.
I'd say that I have an appreciation for radio drama, but not the sort of deep appreciation that it became a part of how I'm writing this show.
Sure.
Two things spring to mind. The first is but Orson Welles's War of the Worlds. I feel like that's like a seismic piece when you hear it, because you're like, hear about it, oh my god, like people like panicked and drove their cars off the road and everyone was terrified, and you're like, wow, that sounds crazy. And you actually hear it, and there's just something so visceral about the audio medium and about how you're like, whoa, we can really transport people in this visceral way. I mean, I feel like listening to that in high school really kind of opened my eyes to like audio drama as like a I keep using the word visceral. I don't know. It's like an all encompassing physically, bodily way to kind of really feel a story on like a bone deep level.
Yeah.
It's a really incredible piece of art for all that it, like, you know, I feel like being in the circles we're in, maybe it's a little bit like, oh yeah, of course, that's the one that like people always talk about in terms of like, oh, you do radio drama. And we're like, yeah, but it is that good.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it uses the medium so well. The fact that it starts out as like a fake other program and then they're like, breaking news, like still genius.
Yeah.
I feel like Dylan Thomas's Under Milkwood was very influential for me. Yes. As far as like, oh, you can just do weird stuff and you can like have tone poems and like just using like this choral work, and you can like be really abstract with stuff, and like that's fine.
Oh, Jess, I love Under Milkwood. Yeah. And I am also so not surprised that it is a thing that you love as well. I feel like that's a big kind of confluence of our sensibilities as artists, and maybe the ones that Eleanor has to keep getting out the spray bottle and like, no.
It's true.
As far as just like audio fiction podcast influences go, the two that are springing to mind, Welcome to Night Vale, started listening like right out of college. And not only, I mean, it was one of the first fiction podcasts I'd ever heard, but like the fact that the story they were telling was so weird and so it felt so specific to those writers, and the fact that there were queer characters from the jump, and just seeing people take it seriously was like, oh, this is a thing you can do, which I had just hadn't really encountered that before. I didn't write plays. I didn't really write scripts at all for many years, but that was a thing. And then also Zombies Run, the zombie-themed running app that tells a story in little audio clips that are interspersed throughout your running regimen. And it's funny because both Bilal and Jess Buha have written for it since then. But the immediacy of that story and the way that it puts you right next to these characters that are going through these wild things. And then also, again, like just the representation from the start of someone telling a story being like, I'm going to try to put characters that I connect with in these ways that I've been marginalized was very moving for me. And also, like, it's a very moving story. The joke is that, you know, you run and you cry, and you run and you cry. And that's the first whole season of Zombies Run, but so good.
I, you know, Night Vale, in some ways like Milkwood, for me was one of those things that like opened up what audio fiction could be. I was like, oh, this doesn't need to be a play that you are just hearing. Like, you don't have to restrict yourself to just naturalistic, realistic presentations of things that would happen on stage or on a screen. And I love what both of those examples just do with audio in kind of transformative ways. Bilal, did you have any that you wanted to talk about?
Well, yeah, it's interesting because I came to audio from theater and performance art. That was the milieu I'd spent the previous decade and a half in. So the first audio I wrote for was a show that was produced by WBEZ called Pleasure Town, which the three seasons that are available, it's set in a small Oklahoma settlement in like late 1800s, you know, fictional settlement where these two people started this place specifically to let hedonism reign supreme. Just like say, hey, this is a town where anything goes, go ahead and do it. And it was a very I really loved the production value of it and the storytelling of it. It was a very, very character-based podcast, which is very much how I've approached most script writing with a character base. And I was fortunate. I joined the team to write the fourth season. And then after we'd finished writing the fourth season and began recording the fourth season, a bunch of life changes meant that we never finished recording the fourth season. And it's just, you know, it exists in the ether. I don't know if the producers ever planned to do anything else with it, but that was kind of me cutting my teeth in audio. But I think what I really liked was moving into audio, I liked both the expansiveness of certain aspects of storytelling and the limitations placed on others. You know, it felt a little bit like getting a slightly different rectangle. It's like the width and the length are changed, but it's still a rectangle. With that in mind, I also, I would say that Unwell has also been an opportunity to not only have like these very lengthy and enjoyable little bits of dialogue repartee, but I think the nature of the tone and the themes like have lent itself to sort of like old fashioned single narrator storytelling. And like, I think when I think of authors who are good at that sort of thing, I think a lot of Neil Gaiman. Neil Gaiman's a big influence on me. Connor McPherson, is a playwright who I think is just fantastic at creating those sorts of creating ghost stories. I think specifically McPherson is so good at that. Cause I think he's very good at understanding that a story told also is built upon the bones of stories that were told to get to that story. And I think for a show that's about memory and ghosts, I think McPherson's been a very interesting peripheral influence on how I've approached it.
The Fable and Folly Network supports creators of exceptional audio stories, including the one you're listening to right now. If you love our shows, we want to hear from you. Complete our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey. This will help us learn more about you, what you like, what you'd like to hear more of, and how we can maintain an inclusive, safe atmosphere. As a thank you for your participation, we have extras and behind-the-scenes content from your favorite shows. Fans make the network what it is. Thanks for listening, and we can't wait to hear from you. Find our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey today.
I've got a craft question from Glenn. How often do episodes, seasons, or even the overall show play out exactly as planned, or do ideas sometimes evolve and divert as the writing process progresses? If the latter, can you give any examples of something that has happened in Unwell which wasn't originally intended? I mean, we already talked a little bit about Chester. Mm-hmm. I think I was fascinated by the way that someone discovered, oh, Chester is a father, and then how that kind of snowballed into a really kind of new shape of character for him. But, you know, what else, what other things fall in that for you all?
I don't recall the last time we had a season like, you know, play out start to finish the way it was always intended. And I think that's good because I think it means that we were listening to each other and what the characters were telling us. I think recently there's been a very interesting connection between Abby and Nora that hadn't been planned. And part of what's interesting about that is because Nora's introduced as a foil to Rudy, but then Rudy started to shift away from Nora's sphere in a way that left a vacuum. And at some point, somebody in the room decided, well, let's shift Abby into that vacuum and let's have these two characters bounce off each other. I think that happens a lot. I think where part of it is us saying, well, we haven't had these two characters bounce off each other. What happens if they do? And we learn something about both characters. And sometimes what we learn about both characters ends up shaping where the plot goes.
Basically, when the way that we plan out our seasons is pretty loosely, and it gives a lot of freedom for the writers to kind of feel their way through the scenarios and the plot and the characters, and to kind of try some stuff. Because, you know, it's not like we're giving like a very detailed outline, like, okay, this scene, this happened, then this scene, and this scene, and this scene. All right, like it's a 5-page outline, like, all right, we all agree on it. All right, now Bilal, you go and like write the thing. We generate the outlines ourselves. And we have like, okay, this episode is, I don't know, going to take place at it. Like, for example, like, I feel like in season one, it was like, episode two was like, oh, like the gang is hungry and like they go and get some food. And episode four was like, all right, like there's some shenanigans. And I'm always losing my phone. So I was like, this is season one, episode four. And I was like, oh, like, I think we just, like, Lily loses her phone. I don't know. And like, basically there's a lot of latitude. I really am obsessed with this advice really resonates with me, like no surprise for the writer, no surprise for the reader. And so I feel like I'm always really trying to follow, at least on the first draft, to follow the instinct of like, where could this go? Where could this get crazy? I write pretty quickly, but I write pretty loosely. So I do generate more drafts. Like, I guess I do try stuff. I had this one thing happen in season two. We'd pick the episodes in an exciting way. We like do a snake draft. And so I was able to pick episodes 11 and 12 in season two. And I feel like one of the episodes was like Thanksgiving. We have where there's a reveal where Wes is a ghost. And so, as I recall, like the initial thing was, all right, we have a Thanksgiving episode. Like, that's super fun. And then we have episode 12 is like Wes, like there's like kind of a intervention and Wes realizes he's a ghost. And then I'm like drafting these out. This is before we started doing outlines. Everyone had to do outlines because of me, because I would do things like this where I would be like, I'm going to write episode 11. And I was like, I feel like both these things had happened in the same episode. I put the intervention thing in episode 11, and then I just wrote this brand new story that we had not been agreed on. It was a total surprise to everyone. I was like, here you go, champs. Like, I feel like I might have like Fenwood like burning to the ground and then like getting, I don't know.
Oh, I feel like we've had to stop you from burning down, destroying, or otherwise detonating Fenwood House just about every season. Yeah, it's
like, is this the one where we do that? Right. Is this the one where we do that?
I know. It's true. And so then I was like, eh? And everyone was like, I remember Eleanor being like, wow. Like, she was like trying to be very supportive while also being like, this is very different from what we agreed on. I feel like, and I brought it to like a read through with actors. I don't even know. And it was like, fun, maybe give everyone else a heads up when you start talking. Yeah. I don't know, write a new thing instead of what we talked about. Yeah, so I feel like sometimes I'll like this crazy thing, and then sometimes it will, you know, I don't know, it can sometimes spark ideas.
Yeah. And I think, you know, our process has evolved / changed every season by nature. I mean the first season alone, like, you can't approach the second season the way you approach the first. The first was like, I don't even know how much runway before we even agreed to start writing scripts. You know, it was you know, like months of meetings just deciding on who our characters are going to be. I think it was one single meeting just deciding on names, you know. And obviously by the time you get to the second season, all that work is done. Like, I think also part of the first season was us coming up with overarching lore and understanding that some of it will not be talked about for 3, 4, or 5 seasons, that it's not going to come. We're not going to bring it up at all, but that we had to know it in order to write the seasons prior to those revelations. But then, of course, you know, we had 2 years of interesting times, which also changed how we met as a group. And I know, like, the first draft of a season, you could tell how how influenced all of us were by lockdown and everything else happening around us. And like, you had so many episodes that we'd have plot points or character beats that were not specifically saying, oh gosh, we are in a terrible pandemic, but were clearly in some way or another referencing that feeling of being trapped, or that feeling of loneliness, or that feeling of lack of control. And I think the first draft of the season was useful for us to get to the second draft. But I think it was also useful for us as a team to get some of that stuff out.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of writing quote unquote as therapy, but I think it was useful. Yeah.
But I think this was very much a moment of any port in a storm. There is certainly still a lot of, you know, subtext and just influence of like the fact that we have been living under, you know, this pandemic and under lockdowns at various levels, et cetera, in season four, but it was very much the text rather than the subtext.
Yes.
Initially.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can definitely speak to part of that because I talk about this in the annotated script, but I lobbied so hard for there to be a Crafternoon episode after referencing it in season three. I was like, we've gotta follow the through line. This has to happen. And I like grabbed that episode as soon as I could and wrote an entire episode where they just have this craft fair out in public with all these wolves. And like we did a group read through and it was like, wow, this does not work at all. This is definitely a case of, well, this is some spaghetti that was thrown at the wall that we're just going to kind of scrape off and like put in the garbage and make more spaghetti. Yeah, I actually think that generally whenever I really gun for writing an episode that turns out to be the episode that I have the least idea of what to actually do with, and whenever there's like a last choice and I'm like, okay, I guess this one turns out to be the one where you kind of surprise yourself and come up with something that you actually like.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think I remember we did have one of these, you know, virtual meetings where we did kind of have to just agree, like as a team, that when we talk about where our story is taking place and what time it's taking place in, we had a question in the room, like, do we acknowledge that there is a pandemic raging outside of, you know, in around Mount Aslan? I was like, no, we decided no. We decided this will take place in a completely parallel America where that didn't happen, so we can keep telling our story as we had hoped. So, yeah, so there are definitely things we planned far in advance that we have, like larger things that we did not deviate from. But I think that the minutia of it shifts hourly.
Yeah, yeah, there has always been an overarching plan, although I do think as we have written and learned both about the characters and just, you know, for me, certainly this has not only been a time period, but a piece of art that I have grown a lot as a person because of the process of making this. And I have learned a lot. And I think that has definitely changed both the direction that some things have gone in and, for me, at least, how I talk about and what I talk about in Unwell, what is important about the story. And I mean, I'm quoting Eleanor here, but the pandemic has hugely influenced and changed. And like, who knows what this story would have looked like if there hadn't been a global pandemic halfway through the creation of it. I don't know if it would have been a better or worse story, but it certainly has become a different one. Let's do a fun one. From Shelby, if you had to explore the Fenwood House basement with one character, who would you choose?
Well, that's a good one.
We're midway through season four. It's Wes. I'd explore with Wes.
Yeah.
I think, especially at this point, there's a lot about Wes realizing more of who and what he is, and in ways that will in ways that will make the exploration of the basement both interesting and relatively secure.
Wes is a really good answer. Because, like, I don't know, I love writing Abby, but that would not be a fun time. Part of me, since I don't feel like I can say Wes now, maybe Chester, because I am a coward, which is a fun trait to have while you're writing a show that is sometimes very much a horror show. And I find that if another person is with me and they're freaking out, sometimes it's easier to be like, okay, well, one of us needs to move forward. And so I guess it won't be you. And maybe we could just kind of do that for each other and get through the experience that way.
Mm-hmm. Wes is such a good answer. And I feel like the basement is so like kind of freaking kind of cool. And Wes is just so sunny and like, this is all going to be great. We're going to have fun. Yeah. I have a best friend crush on Marisol. I think, yeah, she'd be fun to like mess up some stuff. Lily would, I think she'd be a little responsible. Like, I don't think we should like mess up the thing. And it's like, but I don't know.
Well, thank you all so much for sitting down and sharing your thoughts on this. Listeners, we hope you have enjoyed getting this little insight into the process here. And we are excited to be back with the rest of season 4 very soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Have a good day. Take care.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.
This is Yanni, and welcome to season 2 of Harlem Queen. Thank you for listening. The season picks up with the search for Michelle.
You are listening to the Floyd J. Calvin program. And now, straight to the headlines. Manhattan debutante and socialite Michelle Mondesir has been kidnapped from her Connecticut boarding school. There is a tri-state search for Mademoiselle Mondesir, who is 15 years of age, Caucasian, and was last seen yesterday evening going to her dormitory.
Stephanie is frantic, and she risks all in order to find her missing daughter.
We will find Michelle. There are troopers all along the New Jersey and Pennsylvania highways.
That's not enough.
Madame Stephanie St. Clair posted a $10,000 reward for information that leads to the safe return of Ms. Mondesir.
You need to take down your reward, Stephanie.
I will not. Those no-good couples are already saying she's dead.
The connection between the debutante and the numbers queen is unclear.
And Stephanie still has to contend with Luciano and Schultz plotting to push her out of her own turf.
Word on the street is that it's Schultz.
Who cares about a lost color girl?
This one is white. Fifth Avenue debutante, lot of money, well connected. And I want to find out why Stephanie is so fixated on the girl. Stephanie is highly invested in her safe return.
What do you need me to do?
I need you to cheese it.
What about St. Clair?
You tried to clip her twice. Is she pushing up daisies? No. We're gonna get her another way.
Even Halstein is suspicious. Is he truly a friend or a foe?
She's putting herself behind the eight ball. There's something more there, and I need to find out. In the meantime, someone has to earn the money she's deciding not to earn.
You have no power in this case, Stephanie. In fact, you're a liability.
I will do everything in my power to get her home safe and sound.
Listen up for season 2. Harlem Queen is a recipient of the Lower Manhattan Cultural Council's Creative Engagement Grant. And once we all get through this safe and sound, we will have a live radio show of Harlem Queen this fall. More episodes to come. Take good care and stay well.